privilege to come here and kind of give my pitch. What's funny about it is I'm really nervous. And it's kind of odd because I do, I'm a lawyer and I do public speaking all the time. But because I'm a lawyer, most of my public speaking is BS, and here I have to tell the truth. That's always a lot scarier than, you know, having a, like an argument or a point you want to make. You know, here we just tell our experience, strength and hope, and whatever you want to take away from that, you can take away from it, which is one of the things I love about AA. And I hope you will forgive me. I do have a sinus infection today. My doctor assured me that it's not the swine flu and it's not the plague, so you're all safe, but I'm a little sick and a little spacey. But I guess we'll just start at the beginning. I have some important things. I have a sobriety date, which is February 20th, 1995. I've been sober for 14 years. Thanks, and that's been great. That's days and nights too, and weekends, which is a tricky. My home group is TUKIPAW, which is Flora County Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Meets on Saturday nights at 7 at the Catholic Church, actually right down the street from us over here. Now, I know you're probably going, why is this old guy in the young people's group? But we'll kind of get to that eventually. I grew up in Porterville, and as handicapped as that is, I had a really good childhood. I had a family that loved me and did the very best they could. I had a lot of good experiences. I had a lot of bad experiences. I mean, that's part of growing up. But there's nothing in my childhood I think I can say, oh, that's why I became an alcoholic. I got a brother and a sister who aren't alcoholics, as far as I can tell, and seem to be doing pretty good. My parents weren't perfect by any means, but like I said, they did the best they could, and they gave me everything that a kid needs. So, I agonized for years over why I became an alcoholic. Like, when I got sober, I'd just sit there and I'd listen to everyone's pitch and try to pick that point where they crossed that line over to alcoholism. And I would go over my own past and try to pick out that line where I went over to alcoholism. I've got no freaking idea, man. I really don't. I think that I never saw that line. Even looking back, I can't see the line. I can say probably by the time I was 15, I was probably an alcoholic, because I remember walking through like the high school parking lot going, I need to get a drink or I'm going to effing kill somebody. And because I care about people, I went and had a drink. I just can't tell. Even looking back, I can't tell. My first drink under my own power, like, you know, I had sips like at New Year's Eve and that kind of stuff. But the first time I got drunk on my own power, I was in fifth grade, and my buddy, his parents had like one of those tricked out bars with all kinds of booze, so we stole some and we got drunk. And I was a thief right off the bat. And that was kind of a pattern for me, because I wasn't a bad kid in fifth grade. If he would have dropped 20 bucks in front of me, I would have said, hey, mister, you dropped 20 bucks. You know, I mean, I was a pretty good kid. But for whatever reason, totally okay to steal booze. Totally okay. And it always was okay. For dope or booze, I could steal it, and it was no big deal. And it didn't bother me one bit. But if I stole property, I mean, I may steal it. I wasn't an angel, but I would at least feel bad about it. So the thing that kind of tricked me about alcoholism, you know, I'm 38, so I'm young enough where it wasn't like nobody knew about drug addiction and nobody knew about alcoholism. You know what I mean? We had the little people come into our school and give us the pack, and we had the Red Ribbon Week, and I knew what it was. But what tricked me about it is it didn't play out like the, you know, after school movie. You know, the after school movie was always Johnny gets drunk, Johnny drinks constantly, Johnny's in the gutter, you know, the next scene, you know, all an hour later. And that's not the way it worked. You know, I was 12, I got drunk, I got dizzy, I fell down, and it was fun. Nothing happened. And so in sixth grade, I did it like three more times that year. When I was in seventh grade, maybe I did it a dozen times. When I was in eighth grade, maybe I did it, you know, once a month. So, you know, it didn't seem to be a problem, right? And I kind of knew that, you know, I don't know how old you are in eighth grade, like 13 or something. I was pretty sure that 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds shouldn't be getting drunk, but what the hell? It seemed to work. And there's just no consequences to it. And Now, one of the other things that was going on when I was younger was, and I always look back on this as kind of sad, is there were a lot of good things about me as a kid. There were a lot of things I should have been grateful for and I should have been happy about. But for whatever reason, I didn't seem to be able to. You know, I always focused on all those things I wasn't. You know, like school came easy to me. I was good at school. I loved kind of like, you know, weird creative things. I was a big old nerd. Loved being a nerd. Wish I just, you know, stayed being one, to be honest with you. I loved like fantasy and science fiction and monster robots and all that kind of stuff. It was great. You know, smart, but what I really wanted to be is I wanted to be 6'2", buff, and cool. That's what I wanted. You can see I've kind of failed at that today. but that's what I wanted, and so I walked around not feeling comfortable in my own skin because I wasn't that thing that I wanted to be. By the time I hit high school, you know, I'm pretty sure I want to be cool because I found girls, and I knew girls like cool dudes, and I didn't want to be a nerd, and I was kind of desperate not to be a nerd. And one of the things I kind of had discovered that I was good at was drinking. And I kind of looked at high school and I was going, well, you know, I'm obviously going to go on to greater things. I had a lot of, like, you know, we all have different things that we're arrogant about. I was very arrogant about being smart. And I kind of figured, well, you know, it's Porterville High School, everyone's an idiot. So I'll just party all through high school and then I'll go off to Harvard and be like some kind of big thing. And so that's what I did. You know, I had all these kind of nicknames in high school. My first nickname, the first week I got there, was Alcoholy. And my last name's Holly, so it kind of worked. Because I passed out at Hoagie's Heroes, like, my first or second week of high school, like, on top of this kid's car. And he was cool. He didn't kick my ass or anything for it, but he just let me sleep it off. But, you know, and that's kind of how high school went. It was a lot of fun at the beginning, you know. It kind of, you know, I'm out there, I'm partying, I'm drinking. You know, I meet some girls, you know. I meet some friends. You know, I get in, well, I grew up in Portland, right? So I've been in fights all through grade school. But for whatever reason, alcohol seemed to help. Kind of made it like, I'm still 5'8 and slow. So I didn't win a whole lot of fights, right? But I could at least stand my ground, which was cool because, you know, if you can stand your ground, people wouldn't pick on you. You know, that kind of seemed to help that. And I got some, you know, derelict friends that liked to drink. And it was great for a while. And it just started to creep up on me. Just ever so slowly, you know. It wasn't like, you know, I got drunk and I drank every day. And I started trying some other things. One of the things that happens all through high school is I had this long list of things. Because, like I said, those guys had come into school and told us about alcoholism, right? So I had this long list of things that I would never do. So I was only going to drink, never do anything out. By the time Christmas rolls around, I'm smoking weed all the time. And, you know, I moved on to other things. I was never going to drink in the morning, but one day someone said, let's get drunk in the morning, and I said, okay. You know, I wasn't going to drink at school, but again, one day someone said, hey, let's get drunk at school, and I said, okay. But, you know, I wasn't doing it every day, and the process was so slow, I didn't really see it coming. And I started developing this pattern where I would drink and do other things way too much, and I'd get in trouble, and then I would stop. And I would put everything back in place, get my grades back up, get mom and dad happy, you know, whatever horrible thing I did when I was drunk, you know, I'd make up for it. And then I would tie one on again and tear down the whole house of cards, and I did that my whole life. And that pattern starts to play out. And it's that old saying, first it was fun, then it was fun with trouble, then it wasn't trouble. You know, it started getting kind of scary at the end because as much as I wanted to be some kind of tough guy, I just wasn't. I just didn't have the heart for it, man, or the toughness for it. So it just wasn't working for me. And, you know, I started bumping up against the real tough guys by the time I'm 18. And I kind of needed to get out of town. It was getting a little hairy for me. My parents, thankfully, you know, had good jobs and were able to support me to go to college. And my dad sat me down and said, you know, listen, it's the military college or I'm just going to drop you off out of county and drive away. And since you ain't staying here. You know, crazy as I am, I actually went and talked to all the Army recruiters and everything, but they lost me as soon as they said, you know, we do more before 6 a.m. Than other people do all day. That wasn't flying. So college actually seemed a lot easier. But I knew, this is my first inkling that I kind of had a problem, because I knew that I couldn't do college and party the way I did. I was going. I was really disappointed because I graduated with like a mighty 2.2 or something like that. And it turned out Harvard wasn't accepting 2.2 GPAs. I actually was crazy enough that I applied to a couple Ivy League schools and was actually disappointed when they turned my ass down. So I decided to go to Point Loma Nazarene College because they kind of sent me a little scholarship and wanted me. It wasn't really the money. It was the fact they wanted me to go there. And I checked it out, and it's kind of like this, I don't know, kind of fascist regime over at the college campuses. They have all these strict rules. You can get kicked out for fornication and all kinds of things. And I said, well, I'll go there, and then I'll have to study, right? And I'll get all A's, and then I'll go to Harvard, where I should be. The problem with that is Point Loma's in San Diego, and it is exactly 27 minutes away from Tijuana. And right at, yeah. So you guys do what I didn't. My first night at orientation, I make three friends exactly like me, and we go to Tijuana. And we basically did that for the next 9 months until I got kicked out. I remember they would hold me up in the room. They kicked me out. They caught me with just booze and drugs and porn. And not only mine, but I had taken all my friends and put it in my car to hide it. So, like, there's this unbelievable amount of, like, sin and depravity in the trunk of my car. And they just assume it's all mine. And I pointed out that part in the Bible about forgiveness, you know, thinking that would be my way out. And they said, Trevor, we forgive you. Now get out. So, you know, and that was the first time I really thought I had a problem, because I'd gone nuts, and it had been an everyday thing during that period. And I was sitting on Ocean Beach, and I was drinking a beer, and I smoked a joint, and I was all like, this has got to end. I mean, this can't go on. And I remember going, okay, no more drugs. And this was the rationalization that was going to keep me drunk for another 6 years. Said, no more drugs. And the thought crept into my head that, dude, maybe you should quit drinking. And I couldn't even think that thought. I couldn't think it all the way through, because I could not envision, just like the big book says, I could not envision a life without drinking. What would be the point? What's the point of working all week if you can't get drunk on Friday and Saturday? And from that point on, that was the real goal of my life. The goal of my life was to kind of arrange things so I could stay sober from Monday to Friday and then be drunk from Friday night to Sunday night. That's the kind of life that I wanted. And I could never really pull it off. There's a big disaster. My parents were actually big in the church, so I just humiliated them when I got thrown out of there. But they kind of took me back in, and I worked at a packing house for about 3 months, and they gave me a second chance. I could go to Cal Poly. I got into Cal Poly because I actually did get good grades, even though I was drunk the whole time. So I move off to Cal Poly, and I'm going to do everything different this time. I'm not going to make any friends, because clearly friends are the problem. And I'm just going to study, and I'm going to be like super serious, and it's going to be great. I kind of do that for a little while, but there's problems. I mean, you know, it's hard to go through life without talking to anybody, you know what I mean? You got to make a few friends. And I still wanted all that stuff that I'd always wanted. I wanted acceptance and friendships and girls and all that kind of thing. You know, I still had all the problems I always had, you know, feeling insecure and all that kind of stuff. So it's not working. And then a scary thing starts to happen is that I probably don't drink as much, but when I get drunk, I don't know how long I'm going to be drunk. You know, I become like a periodic. I might get drunk on Friday, and I might sober up Saturday. I might sober up Wednesday. I don't really know. You know, it's not bad enough where I'm going to be drunk for months at a time, but I'm going to be drunk, but I can't predict how long I'm going to be drunk. And stuff just kind of starts falling apart. And I do really well at school for a little while, but depression starts to kind of set in, and I start going through all these different things to fix me. You know, I join a dojo, a karate dojo, and I find, try churches, and I read all kinds of, I thought philosophy would fix me for a while, so I read all this philosophy, which just depressed me even more. And tried that. I fell in love. I found her, and I was sure she was going to fix me. You know what I mean? It's just the love of a good woman. That's all I needed. And that poor girl, you know, that didn't work out. And when I broke up with her, a horrible thing happened. For about right time after I broke up with her, is when I would drink, there was always this point. It's like a little switch would go off in my head, right? There was always a point where everything was okay, right? There was always a point where everything felt good. And there was one night where I was sitting, I was watching my one channel TV, and I must have been payday because I was drinking like scotch, right? And water, and I just got so drunk that I couldn't read the lines in the book I was reading. I couldn't really see the TV. I went to the bathroom and I had to crawl there, but that switch would not go off my head. That switch did not flip. It was not okay. And that started happening more and more. And you know what? I needed that relief. You know what I mean? I needed that magic moment at some point where everything would be okay. So what I did is I went back to drugs. I became kind of an amateur mixologist, you know, and I ran through the various chemicals I knew, and nothing seemed to work. The only combination that worked was kind of a magic combination of meth and whiskey. There was a small drawback in that I would hear voices and slowly started to go insane. But, you know, there's a price for everything. And I was happy to pay it at the time. And it was a scary thing started happening. Is my head, like I could just feel it kind of deteriorating on me. This is a scary thing for my guy. My whole self-worth is kind of built up into how well I can think. You know, my life is really inside my head. That was really the only thing I had kind of left, you know, and my head just starts to deteriorate. I'm hearing voices, and I'm not telling anyone I hear voices, but I'm hearing voices, and I know that's a bad thing, and so I start, you know, and I start doing that whole dance where I just, you know, my battle cry is still the same. Gosh, I just want to drink. If I could just drink, you know what I mean? If I could just drink, if I could just drink. And the problem is, you know, when I get drunk, I don't make good decisions. Well, first off, the main problem is, and I got to be honest with you, the drinking is probably what's killing me more than anything else, because that's what I do mostly. But it's easier to focus on that other thing, you know what I mean? Say, that's the problem, it's not the drinking. And then the other thing is dragging me down. And I have a little point where I overdosed. I thought the cops were coming in, so I ate an 8-ball of meth. And that was disgusting, by the way. No one's ever tried that. And when I woke up, I was 23 at the time. I had about as much gray hair as I do now. I woke up with a whole bunch of gray hair. And that was awesome. But, you know, my parents come and they see me and they go, Trevor, why do you have a lot of gray hair? You look like hell, man. And so I said, I'm having some problems, but don't worry. I'm okay now. And I'll go to some AA meetings and it'll be all right. And they said, all right. But if you don't, you have to go to rehab. And of course, I don't do anything. It was really funny because I lived in San Luis, and there is, and the Alano Club is up by the train station on Oso Street. I lived like a block away. And I still had a job at this point, and I was still in school, barely. And my job, I went by the Circle K before I hit that meeting. And every day for like 3 months, I would get drunk at the Circle K, buy my booze, and start drinking it before I could go to the meeting. And I just assumed you weren't allowed to go to AA meetings drunk. I mean, who knew? And so it was my excuse. So for like 3 or 4 months, I'm needing to go to AA meetings, and I'm getting drunk. And I'm still doing the math because I need that switch to go off when it won't go off. And everything's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I'm sitting in my apartment one day, going slowly insane, and the phone rings. And I stopped picking up the phone. And I didn't answer phone calls. It was always bill collectors and shit like that, and I didn't want to hear from any of them. But I was like, I was just so lonely and freaked out and feeling, you know, bad that I picked up the phone. And it was my brother. And my brother was on the phone. He goes, dude, I know what's been going on. You're going to rehab. And that kind of freaked me out because my brother just had some friends around town, and I used to kind of, I used to walk around town like absurdly late at night because, you know, I'd stay out till 6 and I'd be walking home and all effed up doing the Frankenstein walk down the street. And like, you know, some of his friends would see me and go, isn't that Steve's brother? God, that guy looks like hell. What the hell's wrong with him? And, And a crazy thing happened. My little moment of divine inspiration, I said yes. Now, I didn't say yes because I was a good guy. It was a good time for me to go hide because I was technically still in school, but I was about to be thrown out and I hadn't been to classes in about a month. I technically still had a job, but my boss was having meetings with everybody else where the meetings would always go like this. Trevor's a really good guy. We like him. How are we going to fire him? And because, you know, I'm supposed to be on sales calls and I'm in the bar getting drunk and that kind of thing. And they just couldn't keep me on. And so all this stuff, I'd already spent next month's rent. I'd written some checks that I couldn't cover. My credit card debt, you know, it wasn't huge, but it was a lot more money than I had. And so I basically had run through everything. I was just sitting there. I was kind of sitting there waiting for the tidal wave of crap to hit me. And someone said rehab, and I thought, well, okay, I can get into rehab ahead of the tidal wave, and maybe that'll be okay. So I kind of went there with all the wrong motivations. I just wanted to get out of trouble. And only, you know, I think only an alcoholic will go, oh, I'll tell everyone I'm going to rehab, and that way I'll get out of all this chaos I created. Because they'll just go, oh, he's an alcoholic, and they'll understand, even though I'm not really an alcoholic. This is all a scam. That was my plan when I went in there. And, of course, when I walked through the door, and I was afraid whether they would accept me. Because, yeah, I'm clearly not an alcoholic or anything. I didn't have a problem. And then, so I'm like, I'm wondering whether I should lie to the admissions officer about how bad I am. I mean, saying, is that enough drinking to get in? And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. No problem. And so I get there, and sadly enough, when I walk through the door, I'm amongst my fellows. I never laughed. I hadn't laughed in years as hard as I laughed my first day in rehab with just all these other crazy drunks in our paper gowns. I was at the, in Bakersfield over at Mercy Center where they have the insane asylum. They used to have a chemical dependency wing, so it was awesome. I was in an insane asylum, but I'm not crazy. I'm in a chemical dependency wing. But it's a short trip over to the crazy side, and that's where my little miracle happened. I went to meetings for 2 weeks, just saying, hi, my name's Trevor, not admitting I'm an alcoholic, because I didn't think I was. But slowly my head started to clear, and what I did is what I'd never done before, because I'd always just told myself, hey, you had a rough patch, you know what I mean? Yeah, you drink a little too much, it's just a rough patch, but you'll get out of it. You just got to buckle down and straighten yourself out. But when I was in rehab, I looked over my whole life from 12 to 24, and it had always gotten worse, never better. You know what I mean? The use had always gone up and never gone down over years. You know, maybe a couple months would be better than the next couple of months, but over years it always got worse. And then I became terrified, because I knew what alcoholism meant. Alcoholism meant that you were doomed to hurt everybody you loved, drink yourself insane, and then die one of those crazy, pathetic alcoholic deaths. Like a lot of my friends had already died. You know what I mean? Drowning in a hot tub, drowning on your own vomit, crashing your car into a bus full of nuns. You know what I mean? Not cool deaths. You know, alcoholics, we generally don't get to die deaths where we're pulling orphanages out of burning buildings. You know, we pass out in the gutter and choke in our own vomit. And like I said, or kill ourselves. And I have a lot of friends that already kind of died a lot of those kind of sad deaths. And that terrified me. And what was worse is that I had been continually hurting all the people I loved. And I didn't know how to stop. And my solution had been I was planning my own suicide. What I found to live for was there was a couple things I needed to do before I killed myself. And I had to take it as an accident. So I had to put everything into place. But I started going to these meetings, and the best thing rehab did was send me to these meetings, because I met some alcoholics who were frankly worse alcoholics than I ever was, who were sober, and that gave me just a little bit of hope. That little bit of hope allowed me to have just a little bit of faith that this program works, and that faith gave me just a little bit of courage to stick my hand out and start trying to work the program. That's our triangle, hope, faith, and courage. And each one will give you a little bit more of the next one. So I did my first step. I did that in group, and they failed me 4 times because I still thought all the stuff was funny, so I'd be laughing when I was doing my first step. And I did it with my sponsor. And the second step was kind of tricky because I was, you know, I thought I was this intellectual giant, so I couldn't believe in something as simplistic as God, right? And so I decided to put it to the test. What my rationalization was is I can't prove there is God. A lot better men than me have tried. You know, the greatest philosophers in history have tried to prove there's a God. And frankly, at this point, it's a draw. You can't prove there is, and you can't really prove there isn't. But what is clearly, if you go to any AA meeting, what you can prove is faith in God, belief in God will get you sober. Whether there is a God or not, the faith will get you sober. Now, the trick is you actually have to believe. But that's kind of how I conned myself into believing in God, is for whatever reason, I knew that the faith worked. And I just sat down and I prayed to whoever answered first, Muhammad, Allah, Buddha, you know, Demigorgon, it wouldn't matter. Whoever answered first got to be God. And a God of my own understanding answered. And I just started my little spiritual journey from there. Kind of wasted too much time on that. I do what everybody does. I spent too much time on the drunk a lot. But I want to just briefly touch on most of the steps. The fourth step, I got my poor sponsor. And we went through the fourth step the first time, and I left off about 5 things. Because there were about 5 things that had happened to me or I had done that I wasn't going to tell anybody else. No living soul could know about that. And the problem with that is that that's not a fourth step. You know, if my fourth step would have just been those 5 things, it probably would have been a good fourth step. And so, you know, I went on, and 6 months later, I'm almost suicidal again and depressed. And I'm at the portable Tuesday night men's meeting looking for a new sponsor and don't know what to do. And it was funny, Terry C. was the guy asked to be my sponsor. And the first thing Terry looked at me, he goes, what step are you on? And I go, oh, I'm on step 8. And he looked at me, he goes, well, we're going to do your 4th step again. And like from that moment, Terry was like a god to me. You know what I mean? I didn't know how he knew. I asked him years later, and he just said, listen, the odds of someone being as effed up as you were and having done a good 4-step or slim to none. So I figured I'd take a chance. Couldn't hurt you. And he was right. I did my 4-step again, and I talked about those things that I had sworn never to talk about. And kind of weight just lifted off my shoulder when I did that. It was amazing. It really was. And the 5th step, the character defects, I don't like giving them up, man. I like my character defects. I really do. But giving them up as much as I was giving up as much as I could at the time was awesome. Was great. And I kind of continually, that's one of the steps I kind of have to go back to sometimes and give up new character defects. The amends were really weird because, you know, when I looked at the 12 steps the first time when I was looking at doing them, I was like, all right, step 9, that's when I get to run around and make everything right. You know what I mean? So I'm going to go out and make millions of dollars and be some kind of big noise, and then I'll run around and I'll buy, you know, that, you know, guy I sucker punched a new car, and they'll have to forgive me, right? And you know, it didn't work out that way. You know, I went and I made my amends as best as I could. A lot of people, unfortunately, I can't find. But it is funny, the ones that are the hardest, a lot of them are the ones I could never make up for. I mean, a lot of the little stuff is easy. Oh, I stole from you, dude. Here's the money. Or I didn't pay you back. Those were pretty simple. But the hard ones were were the living amends I had to make. You know, the people I'd hurt most were the people closest to me, the people who loved me the most. And it wasn't enough to say I'm sorry. You know, I had to change, and I had to do things differently. You know, I had to talk to my mom and dad, you know, once a week, whether I like to or not, you know, just to let them know where I am, and, you know, repair relationships with brothers and sisters and then people I've grown up with. And you can't do that in a day. You know, I found that it was good doing blocking, saying I'm sorry, this was my part in it. But the amends I had to make was not some grand gesture. It was a living amends to them. Step 10, I love step 10. I don't do it perfectly, you know, but you need to keep clearing out all those resentments. Step 11 is, step 11, I love step 11 works so good doing my daily prayer and meditation. It works so good. It makes me feel so good that I stopped doing it. You know, when I'm really dedicated to it, I just feel great and I'm kind of walking on a cloud. And then I feel so good that, you know, I wake up and I don't have time to do that. It'll be all right. And I'll go to work. And it's the constant struggle to stay on it. And then, of course, step 12 is what keeps us sober. There's nothing better than working with another alcoholic, because the doom of alcoholics is that we forget. That's the deal. That's the hardest part of alcoholism, is that we forget. And you talk to anyone who works with alcoholics, they'll show, I just don't understand it. This guy went through hell, and he worked so hard to get sober, and 6 months later, he was drunk. No one understands it. I mean, hell, sometimes we're standing out there smoking going, I can't understand why so-and-so got drunk. Well, he got drunk because he was an alcoholic. I mean, my default is to get drunk. If I don't do something every day not to get drunk, then I'm going to get drunk. That's the way it works. I'm an alcoholic. That's my nature. So I have to kind of combat my nature. And there's nothing better for that than the 12 step. And then, of course, the continuing challenge I have is trying to live life on life's terms. I got to tell about Suki Pa. I got sober when I was 24. And when I got sober, I thought I was like the youngest guy ever to get sober anywhere. You know, it turns out that's not true. But everyone called me kid and portable for years. But when I moved away, I found Young People's. Young People's is an alcoholic anonymous group across California. It's not only for young people. It's AA. Anyone can show up to any AA thing, right? But they have these big conventions where they have young people from all over California get together. And in the big cities, they have meetings with like hundreds of young people under 30. You know, some of them, the youngest person I've seen get sober and stay sober was 14 years old. And she's still sober to this day. I think she's got like 8 or 9 years. And trust me, I know what you're thinking. 14, this chick needed to get sober. She wasn't making it to 16. So thank God she did get sober. But that's awesome. That's awesome. And it was kind of a place I could feel a part of, because, you know, being the young kid everywhere I went, it was kind of nice to go to Young People's, and then I was the old kid. I was the old dog on the block, and that was great. And so I did a lot of service with them. I helped put on some conferences and committees and was a service over there, and that was a great experience. My first job when I was sober was selling insurance. I was going to make $1 million, and I failed miserably at that, which I'm completely thankful for, because I'm sure I would have got drunk if I would have been a good salesman. And then my next job, which I kept for 2 years, was cleaning toilets, and I had to use a family connection to get that one. And that was, I know it sucks when you got to use the family connection to clean toilets, man, but you got to do what you got to do. And that was awesome, though, because that's what I needed. I needed back-breaking manual labor when I first got sober. I saved some money there, and my family kind of helped me out, and I went back to college, and then I went to law school, and I'm a lawyer now. I work for the county, and that's all good. And I hope, I'm not trying to mention that to say, like, I'm a great guy. What I wanted to make a point of that, and I kind of ran out of time to do it, is I didn't plan any of that. You know what I mean? If you would have asked me what I wanted when I got sober, I would have said, I want, like, hot and cold running chicks, a ton of money, and a nice car. You know? I would have cheated myself if that's what I would have actually got. I got something way better. I got a beautiful wife and a young daughter over there. I didn't plan out this whole career. I always would pray, and I would do the next thing God told me to do. And I was willing, and there's a point when I was cleaning toilets where I was willing, if God's will was for me to clean toilets, well, you know what? Someone's got to do it. It's honest and honorable work, so that's fine. He led me to do some other things, and those have all worked out. But I was willing to go where God led me, and I think that was the big deal. Before I met my wife, I thought I would be single for the rest of my life, and I was kind of sad about that because I'd always wanted kids, and I just figured I didn't have any of them. But weirdly enough, when I really accepted that, you know what, maybe I'll never have kids and maybe I'll never get married, I think it was like 3 months later I met her, you know what I mean, and we got married. But it was that willing to accept God's will for me and willing to accept life on life's terms and willing for that to be okay. that really was able to just completely change my life. And now, of course, that's something you got to do every day. You know what I mean? You don't get to an end point on that. I still struggle to try to accept life on life's terms. There's a lot of stuff that I don't like being a grown-up. I really don't. I don't like paying bills. I don't like going to work every day. I really like my job, but I just don't want to be there, like, every day. You know? All that kind of stuff. So I'm still struggling to be a grown-up, but I'm making progress. And, of course, like we say, it's progress, not perfection. And, anyways, I can't tell you how much I thank you guys for being here, because I don't know if it did you any good, but it did me a whole lot of good to kind of go through it all again. And I really appreciate it. So thank you.